or, you know, again, those doubts are poured into these two things. Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. And Dr. Aliyah Levy is with us. We are discussing the Mahdawiyat here. And here we were discussing the general advent of Imam. Is it possible or not?
Well, yes. We have been saying that exactly the same way that Musa, alayhi salam, after leaving Egypt for a long time and coming back to Egypt, very few people knew him, but they were among the righteous people of Bani Israel. They knew him. They knew that he has to be respected because he was a pious person. So very few people were in touch with him.
Yeah.
Right? This is before his official announcement. So it happened. And we have in some narrations that whatever has passed over the nation of Bani Israel will come to you until the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. So the same intidar expectation, that this is even the intidar for Musa alayhi salam took a long time.
Yeah.
So this expectation should actually be experienced by us so that we find this readiness to actually understand Imam alayhi salam. So definitely some very few people are in touch with Imam alayhi salam. And he has already been born based on our, history. We know that Imam alayhi salam was born and he is benefited from longevity. And we discussed this, the philosophy of longevity and whatsoever reason was around that topic.
True.
So we want to say that since Imam alayhi salam is already there, alive, living with people, some people are in touch with him, but he has not yet officially introduced himself, so it is possible that majority of people claim that, okay, we have already seen him.
Yeah.
There is a possibility. This is something that I just imagined by myself. There is a possibility, for example, of Imam being even an important figure in public, maybe. I don't want to actually insist on such idea. I want to say that there is a possibility. The same way that Musa was famous at that time because he belonged to the palace of Pharaoh, right?
Yeah.
Everyone knew that he belongs to that. And Yusuf alayhi salam was also famous from the other side, not from the side of his father. While everyone knew that there is a slave, for example, in the palace of Prime Minister of Egypt, there is a slave who is very wise. Even the Prime Minister of Egypt actually made him visit the leader of Egypt at that time, while he was a teenager. So I want to say that there's a possibility that Imam alayhi salam, when he comes and when he introduces himself, that's why the people say, okay, we already know this person. So regardless of all these discussions, so what is the reason that enemies are trying to make a doubt or misconception out of any of these issues?
Yeah.
For example, why do you believe that he can be known by people earlier? Why do you say that his name should not be mentioned by any, and whoever mentions his real name, he has to be cursed? So what do you think about his longevity? So there are two important issues, cases that are very, very important and extremely sensitive. One is the issue of Karbala, the story of Imam Hussein al-Salam and his martyrdom. And the other one is the issue of intidar and expectation of Imam Mahdi al-Salam, the expectation of the promised savior.
Right.
Why are these two that very important? These two are very important because they are the basis of a religion.
Yeah.
One is making our past and the other is making our future.
Yeah.
So based on the information we have from past, we can make and create our future.
Right.
Right? So in case enemies are able to target any of these two, they're victorious. They're winners. But bi-idhnillah, by Allah's permission, we do not let them to be prosperous in this way. We do not let them to be winners here in this way. Why? Because we have been told, we have been keeping the treasury of Hussein and treasury of Zuhur in our hearts and in our sources and our Islamic beliefs and principles and the concept of intidar and advent. Because these two actually form the basis and the principles of our beliefs and school of thought. They come through four different strategies that we shall discuss them, inshallah, in our upcoming sessions.
We will discuss all that in the upcoming episode. Thank you so much for all those valuable insights. Thank you, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until next session, this is Zainab signing off for now. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Where is the rising sun? Where is
Good night to all of you, dear listeners of Iran Radio. You are tuned in Iran Radio broadcasting from Tehran. Glad you could join us. I'm your host for the next hour. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Let's listen. Islam is the world's second largest religion, and it is a monotheistic faith with about 1.8 billion followers worldwide, originating in Mecca during the life of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of Allah upon him and his progeny. Islam means submission to the will of Allah, and its followers are called Muslims. Muslims believe in one God, Allah, who is the creator of all things and has no partners or equals. The Quran is the holy book of Islam, believed to be the literal word of Allah revealed to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of Allah upon him and his progeny. Muslims adhere to the five pillars of Islam: Shahada, or declaration of faith; Salah, or prayer; Zakat, or charity; Saum, or fasting during Ramadan; and Hajj, or pilgrimage to Mecca. The Islamic year is 11 days shorter than the year used in the Western world. This is because the Western year is based on the orbit of the Earth around the sun instead of on the phases of the moon. And we'll listen to continuation of Iran Radio. We start off this hour's programs with Iran Today. The program focuses on advancements in science and technology in the Islamic Republic of Iran and highlights the latest business and economic developments in the country. And our final program this hour is Let's Recite the Quran. The program teaches eloquent recitation of the Holy Quran at level 2. Stay with us for the next hour.
The 8-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Tehran's newest metro station, St. Mary, has rapidly become more than a transportation milestone. It stands as a proud emblem of Iran's commitment to religious inclusivity in the capital's vibrant core. Opened in October 2025 beside the historic St. Sarkis Armenian Cathedral, the station's name honors a figure deeply respected in both Christianity and Islam. In doing so, it highlights a shared spiritual heritage and reinforces Iran's long-standing tradition of coexistence among its diverse communities. Far beyond its practical role, the St. Mary Station carries meaningful cultural symbolism. Its very presence signals recognition, respect, and a sense of belonging for Iran's religious minorities, an everyday reminder to passengers that multicultural harmony is woven into the country's identity. It also offers a counterpoint to common Western narratives that overlook Iran's efforts to support and acknowledge its minority population. The station's construction began in 2015 and demanded significant technical ingenuity to navigate the tightly packed urban landscape of central Tehran. Today, the station extends 34 meters below ground and encompasses roughly 11,000 square meters of built space. Engineers excavated more than 100,000 cubic meters of soil to bring the project to life. To know more about the metro station, we sat down with Mr. Abdul-Mutahhar Mohammad Khani, the spokesperson for Tehran Municipality, who walked us through its backstory.
ایستگاه مریم مقدس 161مین.
St. Mary Metro Station is the 161st station in the Tehran Metro network across its 7 lines. We have a long-standing tradition in Tehran of naming metro stations after the main streets they sit on, so that wayfinding is easier for citizens. In the case of St. Mary Station, we made an exception. The station is located next to Ostat Nejato Lohi Street, and in the original plans, it had been approved under that name. But about 2 years ago, the city administration made a different and creative decision to name this station after St. Mary, because it sits directly across from St. Sarkis Cathedral. So we reached out to our Armenian and Assyrian fellow citizens and consulted with them on this choice.
Designed to be both functional and visually striking, the station features about 6,000 square meters of stone cladding, enhancing durability while giving the interior a sense of timeless elegance. One entrance is already equipped with 12 escalators to manage heavy commuter flow, and a second entrance is underway to further improve accessibility.
From the very beginning, in designing the architecture of the St. Mary Metro Station, we tried, through the use of sculptural forms, paintings, and artworks that you've probably seen yourself, to do this in consultation with our Armenian and Assyrian fellow citizens. So these visuals and the overall design were created based on their input. The different elements you see in the station's architecture, like the arches at the entrance or the specific tile of the interior, are meant to evoke historic churches and create a positive emotional connection for our Armenian and Assyrian compatriots.
St. Mary Station is more than a point on the metro map. It's a thoughtfully crafted space that blends engineering achievement with cultural respect, symbolizing Iran's dedication to unity, heritage, and forward-looking urban development. Across many centuries and long before modern borders or political systems took shape, the land we now know as Iran was home to a remarkably diverse tapestry of peoples. Jews, Christians, Zoroastrians, those whom the Islamic tradition calls the people of the book, lived among countless other ethnic groups, forming communities that endured through dynasties, empires, and revolutions. The presence of various ethnic and religious groups is not an exception in Iranian history, but a continuous thread woven into its cultural fabric. In a civilization older than recorded memory itself, coexistence grew not out of legal compulsion, but out of lived reality. Yet, as the modern world has grappled with devastating conflicts, ethnic cleansing, and systematic discrimination, international institutions have increasingly turned their attention to the protection of minority rights. In that global context, Iran's contemporary legal framework offers a portrait that differs from headlines and stereotypes. The country's constitution repeatedly emphasizes a principle at the heart of its political identity: equality of all citizens. We also sat with Dr. Ahmad Kazemi, the head of the Research Center for Minorities' Rights, whose insights added depth to our understanding of Iran's diverse social landscape. How do you view the social, cultural, and legal conditions of religious minorities in Iran?
حقوق اقلیت‌ها بخش مهمی از نظام بین‌المللی حقوق بشر هست که
Minority rights are a key part of the international human rights system. After the Second World War, they were addressed internationally through various instruments, including the two 1966 covenants on civil and political rights, and on economic, social, and cultural rights, and ultimately the 1992 UN Declaration on the Rights of National or Ethnic, Religious, and Linguistic Minorities. When we look at international norms and rules on the rights of religious minorities, and then examine the situation of religious minorities in Iran from this perspective, It seems that the main keywords and expectations of the international minority rights, namely non-discrimination, their effective participation in public life, and the protection of their religious and cultural rights, are present in Iran. This is because in Iran's higher-level legal documents, particularly in the constitution, religious minorities are recognized and specific rights have been envisaged for them.
The text of the constitution speaks in sweeping, inclusive language. Everyone, all, every Iranian, to make clear that core rights apply regardless of religion, language, ethnicity, or race. These principles are not abstract. They are tied to concrete guarantees. Article 14, obligations mandated not only to the government but to all Muslims to treat non-Muslims with fairness, good ethics, and Islamic justice. Article 23, freedom of belief and protection from persecution on account of it. Article 29, the right to social security for every individual. Article 30, free education up to the end of secondary school. Article 31, the promise of suitable housing for every Iranian family. Article 34, unrestricted access to justice, protected citizenship, and safeguards against arrest or forced relocation without due process. Our exploration then led us to a synagogue in downtown Tehran, where Rabbi Yunus Hammami Lalezar spoke about the everyday realities of Jewish life in Iran.
What are some of the measures in Iran's constitution that supports and acknowledges the rights of the Jewish community in Iran, and how do they actually transpire in reality?
حقوق اقلیت ها طبق اصل 13 ام قانون اساسی اقلیت های دینی که به رسمیت شمرده شدن از جمله کلمیان.
Under Article 13 of the Constitution, recognized religious minorities, Jews, Christians, and Zoroastrians, enjoy full citizenship rights. In matters of personal status, such as marriage, divorce, inheritance, and similar issues, they act according to their own religious laws. They are free to hold their religious ceremonies. Here in this synagogue, we hold prayers three times a day. Before you arrived, the morning prayer was held. The noon and afternoon prayers will be held about 20 minutes before sunset. We perform the noon prayer, then there is a short ethical talk, and after that we hold the afternoon prayer. Our daily prayers are held every single day. On Saturday, which is our holy day, we have our own religious ceremonies. In Tehran, we have our own schools, which operate within the national education framework. But during religious class hours, we teach our own religious subjects. We have our own nursing home, run under the management of the Tehran Jewish community. We have our own restaurants that follow our dietary laws, and our own butcheries where animals are slaughtered in accordance with our rules of kashrut.
Taken together, these commitments form a broad shield of rights. Freedom of belief, the security of life and property, equal access to education and work, social protections, judicial fairness, and the right to participate in public life. We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. Hasni, Iran urges decisive action to protect civilians in Sudan's al-Fashir. Iran voiced deep alarm over the rapidly deteriorating humanitarian situation in and around al-Fashir, calling on the UN Human Rights Council to confront foreign interference, halt arms transfers fueling the conflict, and uphold Sudan's territorial integrity. Addressing the 38th special session of the Human Rights Council held in Switzerland on November 14th, Iran's ambassador to Geneva-based UN offices, Ali Bahraini, warned that the crisis in al-Fashir has reached devastating levels marked by famine, displacement, and widespread civilian suffering. He also criticized the international community for its silence and inaction, arguing that double standards and continued arms flows have exacerbated the conflict. Tehran Times. Iran minister says UNESCO recognition of Cyprus Charter reflects deep cultural roots of justice. Iran's Minister of Cultural Heritage, Tourism and Handicrafts said the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization's recognition of Cyrus the Great's charter demonstrates that justice has long been embedded in Iranian culture. Reza Salehi Amiri made the remarks on Saturday at an international Iranology conference held at the Islamic Culture and Communication Organization. The event focused on cultural dialogues, opportunities and cooperation capacities, and was attended by scholars and university professors from Armenia, Greece, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Russia, Georgia, China, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Malaysia, Tunisia, Oman, Iraq, and other countries. Salehi Amiri said that Iran represents deep layers of history, culture, and civilization, adding that the country's cultural identity has developed through continuity rather than rupture. He said this historical continuity has contributed to Iran's survival despite multiple invasions over the centuries. Jurist. Iran releases annual human rights report on US and UK. The Iranian Ministry for Foreign Affairs released its annual report on human rights violations committed by the United States and United Kingdom on Sunday, alleging both domestic and international violations. Iran has released these critical assessments since 2012, when the Iranian parliament passed a resolution requiring its Ministry for Foreign Affairs to monitor and report on human rights violations in the US and UK. The 2025 report on the U.S. focused on domestic human rights violations occurring through widespread gun violence and unlawful use by police officers, both of which specifically affect minorities. The report also claimed that the interventionist and militaristic strategies of the U.S. government demonstrate how human rights have been exploited as a tool to secure its geopolitical and economic interests. Iranian authorities argued that the U.S. government's approval of the Israeli Zionist regime in systematically violating the human rights of Palestinians and perpetuating genocide in Gaza illustrates this interventionist tendency. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
But the Iranian constitution does more than extend general equality. It also establishes measures to ensure that the recognized religious minorities can preserve their identities and traditions. These measures begin with religious life itself. Article 13 explicitly grants Jews, Christians, and Zoroastrians the freedom to hold their own ceremonies, a freedom visible in the country's active churches, synagogues, and fire temples. Some even featured on national media during religious occasions. The same article ensures that personal status matters such as marriage, divorce, inheritance, and wills are governed by each community's religious laws, even in state courts. Later, back in the Press TV studio, we welcome Ms. Melina Nazarian, a Christian lawyer based in Tehran. She shed light on the experiences of Christians living under the Islamic Republic and how their situation has evolved in recent years.
Under Article 13 of the Constitution, three religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Zoroastrianism, are recognized as religious minorities. As a result, the personal status of Armenian Christians in Iran, in areas such as marriage, divorce, and inheritance, is applied according to their own religious law. They also have certain freedoms in holding their religious ceremonies. We also have a number of protective principles in the Constitution, such as Article 14, 19, and 23. For example, Article 19 states that all people, regardless of ethnicity, race, or color, enjoy equal rights, and Article 23, which concerns the investigation of people's beliefs, explicitly prohibits any inquisition into beliefs. This is something that is not only provided for in Iran's constitution, but we can also observe it in practice.
Thanks to Article 26 of the Constitution, minority groups are also free to establish their own associations, a right strengthened by the 1982 Political Parties Act, which encourages organizations devoted to cultural, social, and welfare activities. Today, dozens of these associations operate openly across the country.
Armani, واقعاً از هیچ لحاظی محدودیت در ایران ندارند.
Armenian minorities really don't face any limitations in Iran in any respect. These constitutional principles are properly upheld. They receive support both from the state and from society at large. They never feel like a minority, nor do they feel restricted or banned from doing anything. And we can genuinely see, in practice, that the Constitution is being fully implemented in this regard.
Representation in national governance is guaranteed as well. Article 64 of the Constitution reserves seats in parliament for minority communities, one each for Zoroastrians and Jews, one shared for Assyrian and Chaldean Christians, and two for Armenian Christians, one in the north and one in the south. This system intentionally grants minorities a greater share of parliamentary voice than their population size alone would provide. Rabbi Hamami Lalezar emphasized that the Jewish community faces no discrimination in Iran. If anything, he remarked, they experience what he described as positive discrimination.
In Iran, Jews, both because of their long historical presence here and because of the character of the Iranian people, actually benefit from a kind of positive discrimination. You can see that in many parts of the world, because Zionism and Judaism are often conflated, and because of Israel's actions, Jews have not been treated well. For example, Jews were expelled from Iraq and Afghanistan. But in Iran, the situation has never been like that. Imam Khomeini's statement on this is very well known. In the early days of the revolution, he made it clear that Judaism, as a divine religion, is distinct from Zionism. This approach has continued throughout the Islamic Revolution and afterwards under the leadership of the leader of the Islamic Revolution. One example of this positive discrimination in favor of minorities in Iran is that despite their very small share of the population, there is a dedicated representative for the Jewish community and a dedicated representative for the Zoroastrian community who follow up on their affairs.
Over the years, additional measures have expanded these protections. Minority representatives may take their parliamentary oath on their own sacred texts. Religious sites such as churches and synagogues receive tax exemptions. Religious associations gain access to financial support. Legal standards for minority candidates in public positions are tailored to respect their faiths. Ms. Nazaryan added that conditions for Christians have notably improved, and we asked her to share an example illustrating that change.
In 2013,
with the adoption of the new Islamic Penal Code, it was formally established that the blood money, diyeh, for Muslims and non-Muslim people of the book would be equal. This was a very important step forward for minorities, and in my view, it's one of the most significant changes we've seen in recent years.
Minorities, in addition to national holidays, are granted special religious leave under a 1988 directive. Zoroastrians 5 days, Jews 6 days, Assyrians 8 days, Catholic Armenians 7 days, and Gregorian Armenians 6 days. Religious sites of minorities also benefit from reduced costs for utilities such as water, electricity, gas, and telephone. Currently, around 300 churches are active in Iran, and 40 churches have been restored by the Cultural Heritage Organization. Additionally, 57 religious social minority organizations are active and receive government support.
One important point is that in international law, a key issue regarding religious minorities is that they should be visible in public life. In fact, one of the major items on the agenda of the UN Forum on Minority Issues in Geneva in December last year was exactly this: the reflection of minority symbols in public life, in urban spaces, and the social sphere. In Iran, in addition to the places of worship of religious minorities, which are clearly visible in our cities, we have also recently seen an example of this in Tehran, where a metro station was inaugurated under the name of St. Mary. It was done as a mark of respect for minority rights with a very distinctive architecture that blends Iranian design with elements from the Christian religious minority.
Specialized dispute resolution councils have even been established to address personal status matters for Jewish, Christian, and Zoroastrian citizens, ensuring both sensitivity and expertise. Meanwhile, Sunnis are not considered a religious minority, as they are part of the Muslim majority. They have a significant presence in political and administrative arenas. 5 representatives in the Assembly of Experts, 22 representatives in the 12th Parliament, 81 Sunni judges, including deputy prosecutors, investigators, etc. Over 1,400 employees in the judiciary, and nearly 1,700 members in dispute resolution councils. In recent years, the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance has expanded its direct support for minority cultural expression. Between 2019 and 2024, the ministry took supportive initiatives, including issuing 376 permits for gatherings and religious ceremonies, issuing 69 permits for residence, work, and entry-exit of foreign religious representatives, holding 70 official meetings with institutions belonging to religious minorities, authorizing the publication of 157 books by minority publishers, organizing 107 national and provincial conferences and festivals for religious minorities, providing subsidies to religious minorities' media outlets, distributing more than 400,000 kilograms of subsidized paper for publications serving minority regions.
How do you see religious freedom regarding the Jewish community in Iran? I mean, how freely can they practice their own faith?
We play our full part in society, right alongside everyone else, at school, at university, during military service, at work. It's in such a way that if you didn't already know me, you probably wouldn't be able to tell that I'm Jewish or that I follow a different religion. I go about my personal life like anyone else, and even when people do know that I belong to a minority, they often treat me with even more consideration. We have the Tehran Jewish community, which has a long history. We have very good relations with the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance when it comes to organizing our ceremonies, and also with the police, who genuinely work hard to maintain security and who put in a lot of effort for our community as well. Different state bodies cooperate well with us, and the security institutions also work with us whenever necessary. Overall, there is cooperation and mutual support between the Jewish community as part of the Iranian nation and the state.
Education follows the same principle of inclusion and preservation. While all religious minorities have access to Iran's public school system, many also operate their own institutions that continue to educate new generations within their cultural and religious traditions. Currently, there are 5 Jewish, 38 Zoroastrian, and 50 Christian schools in the country.
Across all these layers, such as legal guarantees and protections, administrative support, cultural freedom, educational autonomy, Iran's constitutional framework seeks to maintain not just equality, but the survival and dignity of the religious communities that have lived on Iran's soil for millennia.
These on-the-ground realities are the very ones that astonished the American journalist, author, and filmmaker Max Blumenthal, who traveled to Iran this year to witness the lives of his fellow Jews firsthand. His documentary, Jews of Iran, pulls back the curtain on a community often obscured by layers of Iranophobic myths and distortions, revealing a lived experience far more nuanced and far more human than the caricatures that dominate foreign narratives.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program, Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host Mahdi, and as always, we are joined by Quran expert, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum, brother Mahdi. Thank you for having me, and assalamu alaikum to all the dear listeners of this program. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, the program Let's Recite the Quran consists of several Quranic parts. First, Brother Muhammad is going to talk about the music or the musical miracle of the Noble Quran. Then, we all are going to listen to a recitation by a famous reciter of the Noble Quran. And at the end, Brother Muhammad is going to analyze that recitation from different aspects. Stay tuned.
إن هذا القرآن الذي جل فيه.
Dear audience, as always, today in the first part, Brother Muhammad is going to talk about the miraculous music of the Noble Quran. In a previous episode, we talked about the odd words which are used to talk about the odd things in the Noble Quran. Now, Brother Muhammad, let's continue our discussion.
Sure. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's program, I want to talk about the rhythm of certain surahs and how it helps us to picture that meaning, the concept that God is talking about in that surah. The surah we're going to talk about today is Suratul Adiyat. Adiyat means steeds, horses that are, you know, they run really fast. They're called Adiyat because, you know, in Arabic, certain things have different names. The same thing has different names. For example, we have many words for camel, a red camel, a female camel, a male camel. For example, a camel that's still a baby, and so on and so forth. And for horses, it's the same. We have Adiyat, we have Safinatul Jiyad. I think we have this in Surah Sa'd. So there are different names. Al Adiyat means horses that run really fast.
And those which are used for flight.
For the battles. Yeah, for in the battles. They usually use these kind of horses. So anyways, وَالْعَادِيَاتِ ضَبْحَا فَالْمُورِيَاتِ قَدْحَا فَالْمُغِيرَاتِ صُبْحَا. See, all of these words, وَالْعَادِيَاتِ, we have all letters with تَرْقِيق followed by a letter of تَفْخِيم followed by قَلْغَلَ. We have this pattern for all of the verses, the first four verses, almost the same. For example, وَالْعَادِيَاتِ ضَبْحَا, law. We have a law, and followed by ba with قَلْغَلَ. فَالْمُورِيَاتِ قَدْحَا, again قَاف, mm-hmm. and then dal with قَلْغَلَ. فَالْمُغِيرَاتِ صُبْحَا, then صَال. And this qalqala alternating between tafkhim and targhib, it creates a rhythm as if the horses are running. You know, they're running really fast and forward. We can hear their the steps of the horses due to the rhythm that it has.
And the meaning is really beautiful, you know.
Yeah. The charging of the horses, we could actually, it's like we could feel it, we could hear it. It says, you know, the horses that, how they pant really hard while running. They strike sparks of fire. They push home the charge in the morning and raise the dust in clouds. And
he's making a picture, actually.
فَوَسَطَ نَبِيهِ. Yes, all of this is, Allah is very beautifully describing these horses.
And Allah swears by these.
Yes, yes, that's right. Allah is swearing by these. And what does he say? And for what reason is he, swearing by these horses? إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَرَبِّهِ لَكَنُونَ. Truly man to his Lord is ungrateful. Truly man is to his Lord ungrateful. So here we don't, it's gone. That rhythm is gone. The rhymes, you know, they're no
more. Different, actually.
It's different. إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَرَبِّهِ لَكَنُونَ. وَإِنَّهُ عَلَى ذَلِكَ لَشَهِيدٌ. Again, the rhyme is different because it's a new topic. It's no longer talking about the horses. أَفَلَا يَعْلَمُ إِذَا بُعْثِرَ مَا فِي الْقُبُورِ وَحُصِّلَ مَا فِي الصُّدُورِ إِنَّ رَبَّهُمْ بِهِمْ يَوْمَئِذٍ لَخَبِيرٌ. So this is very beautiful that some surahs, the rhythm and the rhyme really helps us to visualize that concept that God is talking about in that surah. And after Allah, you know, swears by those things, those, for example, horses in the surah, he wants to, you know, he's trying to make a point. God is trying to is making a point, actually. He's saying that man is ungrateful and that he bears witness by his deeds. He is violently in love of wealth. And then he says, أَفَلَا يَعْلَمُ إِذَا بُعْثِرَ مَا فِي الْقُبُورِ. God asks a question and then finally says that.
That's a kind of attack question, I think.
Challenging. God is challenging man. And God says that, إِنَّ رَبَّهُمْ بِهِمْ لَيَوْمَئِذٍ لَخَبِيرٌ. That their Lord had been well acquainted with them even to that day, the day that they go into their graves.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad. Dear audience, stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break. Well, dear brothers and sisters in Islam, in the second part of the program, let's recite the Quran. Today we are going to listen to a recitation by Abdul Reza Siddiq. He's going to recite Surah Al-Fatir, verses 31 to 35. Let's enjoy it.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والذي أوحينا إليك من الكتاب هو الحق مصدقا لما ذلك هو الفضل
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, you're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran. And what you just listened to was recitation of Surah Al-Fatir, verses 31 to 35, recited by Brother Abdul Reza Siddiq. Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, in these verses that were recited by Brother Abdul Reza Siddiq, it's very interesting that the topics of each verse is there's a lot of variety in it, and it's not, you know, just one thing. They are related, but it's, you know, it's different. For example, verse 31, it's about that which we have revealed to thee of the book is the truth. Allah is, you know, he's addressing his prophet, Prophet Muhammad. You know, in the Quran, when Allah addresses someone in second person and says, you, say, orders a person, the addressee is always the prophet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, most of the time is the prophet. It also could be the believers. You know, it could be, most of the time it's the prophet. So God is saying that this book, the Quran, that is revealed to Prophet Muhammad, confirms what was revealed before it. It confirms the gospel, the Torah. And, of course, in the original version.
That's the point, actually.
Not the gospel and Torah that we have right now in our hands, the Bible. Because we believe that certain inconsistencies exist between the Quran and the Bible, and this is because of the alterations and the distortions that have been created.
And the proof is different, I think, versions of these.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the different versions are contradictory sometimes, mm-hmm. Okay? And so, with respect to his servants, Allah is well acquainted and fully observant. إِنَّ اللَّهَ بِعْبَادِهِ لَخَبِيرٌ بَصِيرٌ. Then, ثُمَّ أَوْرَثْنَا الْكِتَابَ الَّذِينَ اصْطَفَيْنَا مِنْ عِبَادٍ. Then we have given the book for inheritance to such of our servants as we have chosen. But there are among them some who wrong their own souls, some who follow a middle course, and some who are, by Allah's leave, foremost in good deeds. That is the highest grade. So Allah is talking about three groups of people in one verse. So how beautifully. So he says, those who we gave the book, some of them, they wrong their own souls, okay? They commit sins. Some who follow a middle course, وَمِنْهُمْ مُقْتَصِدٍ, okay?
Yes.
And some who are, by Allah's leave, foremost in good deeds. So we can see that this verse and the previous verse, they are related, but the topic and the content of this verse is different, and so we have a lot of variety in the meanings of the Quran in each verse. Now, well, let's talk about tajweed. We have at the beginning of this surah, verse 31 of Surah Fatir, the first verse that was recited, we have matul munfasil, walladhi awhayna ilayk. So, Brother Abdul Reza Siddiq, he does qasr of matul munfasil, which means that he only lengthens the mad to two vowel counts.
Mm-hmm. Just like a normal mad.
Like a normal mad, and so once you do qasr, you're not allowed to do tawassut, for example. You have to be consistent. You have to always do qasr. If you want to do tawassut, you have to do it at the beginning.
Yeah.
The first time
you come across it.
Yeah. That you read. Then we have a lot of letters of tafkhim. Huwa al-haqqu musaddiqan. Okay. La khabirun basir. Basir. Now, the levels of tafkhim for these words are not the same because they have different vowels and long vowels. For example, al-haqqu, the qaf has a dhamma, so it has the moderate level of tafkhim because you're making the lips, you're rounding the lips, you're making the lips rounded. Haqqu, musad, sa. Sa has a fatha, it has the second highest
level.
We don't say musaddiqan, musaddiqan. We say musaddiqan.
We don't have to open the mouth too much.
Tafkhim is not as much as it is whenever there's an aliful med,
mm-hmm.
a long vowel alif after the letter of tafkhim, the letter of isti'la. Musaddiq, qan. Again, the qaf has a tanween al-fath. So we have the second highest level. Of course, if you stop on this word, musaddiqa, the qaf would have the highest level because it has alif al-mad, waqf al-ibdal. لَخَبِيرٌ بَصِيرٌ بَصِيرٌ. We have the lowest level of tafkhim for the sad. بَصِيرٌ.
And the way to apply it?
We spread the lips while pronouncing sad with the root of the tongue raised. Of course, you should not say basir. Basir. We still have the raising of the root of the tongue.
To prove that it is a tafkhim letter.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Please click on the tab Call of Islam, and there you can listen to this program as well as other programs of this radio. Until next time, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye.
نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبي لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر حسن الأخلاق هو القرآن.
Good night to all of our listeners. You are tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran. Glad you could join us. I'm your host for the next hour. We start off this hour's programs with our news bulletin. After that, we have Minbar. The program covers speeches on a host of subjects by very well-known Islamic scholars and orators, and they will be followed by Round the World with reporters. Reporters from around the globe tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from distant land. And we round up this hour's programs with leaders' speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches by Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. Stay with us for the next hour.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
As a reminder of our top stories, the leader of the Islamic Revolution says the Iranian nation defeated both the U.S. and Israel in the 12-day war as they reached none of their objectives. Tehran has strongly condemned the violence against Palestinians in the West Bank, saying Israeli crimes should be recognized as crimes against humanity. And at least 13 people have been killed in Israeli attacks in the town of Beit Jin near Syria's capital, Damascus. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, I am Bahman Nuray, and this is news. The leader of the Islamic Revolution has dismissed rumors that Tehran has sent messages to Washington seeking dialogue, stressing that the United States is unworthy of Iran's cooperation. Ayatollah Khamenei also recalled the 12-day imposed war in Iran in June, noting that the Iranian nation defeated both the U.S. and Israel as they reached none of their objectives. The leader